This is a service recording of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Oneonta, New York.
Welcome to part two of our special service series for the January session, theme of sharing our stories. While our children and youth are exploring the power of stories with special guests and interesting foods and fun dances, we are spending our time with some stories from our past, stories of Unitarians and Universalists. Today, I'm going to share some stories from our own past, stories of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Oneonta. Next week, I'll be sharing some stories of our UU heroes, agents of change and transformation. And the last Sunday of the month, the 26th, the folks from our religious education program will take the chancel and share their learnings with us, followed by a potluck after the service. Now, I have two corrections for today before we continue. First, when I chose the title for today's service some months ago, I wrote the UUSO story. That was a mistake. A mistake no good storyteller would make, especially a Unitarian Universalist one, because there is no one definitive story of anything, let alone our congregation. There are many stories. This society has been here for over a century. That is a lot of time for stories. And every person who has been a part of this community would tell them differently. So much like our non-creedal concept of personal theology, we must also subscribe to a multitude of possible stories. So I made the change in the order of service from the to our UUSO stories. It has been pointed out to me before that I use our a great deal in my sermon titles, that and circles. I am fond of them both, because they are central to who we are and what we believe, this shared ministry of ours. The second mistake I need to correct is less a mistake and more of a change of heart. I had planned on doing a reading today on the benefits of storytelling, but that would be preaching to the choir, literally. You all love stories. You know the power of them. So instead of sharing that reading, I'd like to do something a little bit different. I'd like to take a few minutes to share some of our stories, but not from me. I'd like to do it from you. If you feel comfortable doing so on the spur of the moment, I invite you to share with the congregation your favorite memory of UUSO. Make it brief, please. And Shirsty's going to have the microphone again. So raise your hand if you don't mind sharing your favorite memory of UUSO. Oh, we have one already. Thank you.
Dottie Hudson. The very first time we came to church was August, 40 years ago. And there was a wonderful congregation of two here to greet us. Heidi Siegfried and Lyman Achenbach. What more could you want?
Hi, Rich Stelling. When Prue and I were first married, we were searching around for religions. And living down in New Jersey, we started going to a house that had people talking about Unitarianism and Universalism. Had no idea what they were talking about. They recommended that we go down to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and visit the minister down there. His name was Keith Munson. And so we did. And alas, the first sermon was a psychological sermon. I loved it. I've been a Unitarian ever since.
A few Christmases ago, I guess it was a little after Christmas, for some reason, a bunch of us guys were standing around and somehow got to the topic of Christmas presents or stuff that happened during the past year. And we all went around, oh, I got this, I got that. And Spike stood up and said, I got a new heart. That trumped everything.
I was actually just reminded of this yesterday because I was looking at some videos on my computer, but I think one of the most treasured stories that I have from here is that I've been married in this sanctuary not once, but twice. We had our first marriage ceremony, which was, you know, the marriage ceremony of our heart with our families here in 2009, April of 2009. And then we were remarried by Craig when gay marriage was legalized in New York State. And I think, thinking back, the only moment of joy that I can think that compared to that I've had in the sanctuary is probably actually the moment that we voted Craig in at 100%. And I just remember that being another incredible moment of joy.
Hi, many of you will remember that I was active in this congregation about 30 years ago and used to sing fairly frequently. And one of my favorite memories, stories of this congregation was one Sunday when I was asked to sing the offertory, and it happened to be Pledge Sunday, or the Unitarian equivalent thereof. And so I sang, I Got Plenty of Nothing. And Andy Backus said it was one of the best rakings in that they had ever had.
Do one or two more, and then we'll move on.
When Craig asked us to think during the meditation, I immediately thought of Jack Ahern and how he always got us off to a good start on the covenant. And that's one of my fondest memories.
The first two people I thought of were Valentine Green and Bob Engstrom Haig. And if you didn't know them, to me anyway, they're about the two most different personalities you can imagine. There's the steely resolve of Val Green and kind of the mellow and mellowness of a poet of Bob Engstrom Haig.
If you've watched or listened to Prairie Home Companion, you've heard them talk about the Unitarian missionaries. Well, you had one. I was a Lutheran, and a new professor came to Hartwick College and thought that her children should go to church. So, being from the Midwest, she brought them to the Lutheran church, and I sang in the choir there. And every Sunday, as we would recess as a choir, there would be this woman sitting in the back row reading the New York Times. And each Sunday, she would lower the New York Times and say, Judy, you should go to the UU church. And when wander see, here I am.
I think on that note, we'll end it. But there are more stories. You all have them. After the service, during the social hour, find somebody and share it. I'm reminded of two stories based on things that Elaine said during the sharing time. The first legal same-sex wedding I did was in the sanctuary for a friend and colleague by the name of Megan Dalby and her wife, Christy Jones. And they came here to visit and get married, and Elaine came and decorated the sanctuary with the materials from her first wedding. And Michael and Dorothy came and sang to provide music for the service. And they sang the song that Michael had written for Dorothy for their first wedding anniversary. So that was a pretty special memory. And the other memory is, since you mentioned the call, we had to book out of here right away before you could take the vote so we could make our flight. And so Cheryl and I were on the highway driving back to the airport in Syracuse, I think. And the year before, the church where I was serving had voted whether or not to call me as a minister, and I had needed 85% of the vote, and I got 83. And it was possibly the worst evening of my life. After the vote, I had to come out of my office and address the congregation and tell them that everything was going to be okay. And then I had to spend the next year figuring out where we were going to go. So when the search committee called me after your vote and announced that the vote was 100% and that I was being called, I had to pull over to the side of the road because it was 5 minutes before I could stop crying. It's a good memory for me, too. In preparing for this morning, I was hoping to tell four stories, two from our history and two of a more recent nature, and this proved to be a bit difficult than I had thought it would be. I wanted to tell the tale of the building and the dedication of the building and the answer why we call it Chapin Sanctuary. I also wanted to share a different tale, a slightly less positive one, the tale of the two windows. Unfortunately, I wasn't here for either one of those events. I wasn't even alive for one, probably both of them. And our records, well, we lost most of our church records from the early years when the steeple on the sanctuary suffered a fire. Used to be a steeple up there. Lightning strike, was it, Bob? Yeah. So maybe one of the other churches in town said a hasty prayer and we lost our records. And so I've had to rely on bits and pieces from some of you. Many thanks are due to our congregational historian, Bob Brzezowski, for his research and his time. Alice Siegfried was kind enough to meet with me and tell me some stories and show me some pictures and let me read some letters from a former minister, the Reverend Hunter Leggett. Arlene and Bill Benedict wrote me a great email with some bits and pieces of the story from their time here. And I received a copy of a wonderful sermon written by a former member, June Edwards, on the Reverend Edward Chapin. I also want to thank those who agreed to let me tell the more recent stories, those named and unnamed. They're not my stories, they're theirs, and they agreed to let me share them. So let us start with the founding of this congregation, the building of this sanctuary, and why it is named Chapin. This area was a hotbed for Universalism. Now, when I went to school, I was taught in seminary that the Unitarians pretty much had this area around Boston and the East Coast covered, and the Universalists were out on the western frontier, which is the Midwest now. So the Universalists had a lock on Wisconsin and Minnesota and all of that. That's not true. They missed the fact that the Universalists were all over here. There were 15 Universalist congregations in this county starting in 1807. The Universalists started meeting here in Oneonta in 1852. Informal, regular gatherings, but we're not quite entirely sure where and when. Very much like the early Christians. They met and they gathered and they discussed and they worshiped. And I'm reminded of almost every church I've served has served as a host to other fledgling faith communities who didn't have a place to worship. So I'm wondering if other faith communities in this town might have done the same thing for those early Universalists. They incorporated officially as a Universalist society 15 years later in 1877. So for 15 years, they were meeting regularly, but didn't make it official. Maybe they were not joiners. It runs deep. The influx of new people from the railroad and from people moving into town, they started getting big enough where I don't think the informal gatherings were working very well for them anymore, so they incorporated, and then they needed their own space. And so they built their first building, finished and dedicated it 2 years later in 1879. At the dedication ceremony, as you usually do, you have somebody important or somebody famous come in and dedicate the new building. This is not always the case. The church I served as a student minister in Heartland, Wisconsin, when they bought their first sanctuary and moved from the Presbyterian church to their own space, I got to preach the first service in it. But I was not really well known, and I did not draw a big crowd. My mom came. Here, Edward Hubble Chapin was the guest that gave the dedication sermon. He was the minister at the Divine Paternity and the Fourth Universalist Society of New York City. Fairly large congregation, very popular. I remember last week we talked about P.T. Barnum being a member of Olympia Brown's church. Before he moved there and joined her church, he was a member of Chapin's church. As a matter of fact, Chapin officiated at his wedding, and they became fast and dear friends, often dining together and joking together. And in Bob's sermon, there was a piece about how they both loved puns. I will spare you the puns. Anyway, Chapin had come out here before numerous times. Chapin was extremely popular. He was one of the preeminent Universalist preachers of his time. And he traveled a lot. He was a Universalist evangelist, trying to plant the seeds, trying to get more congregations to pop up. And whenever a congregation formed, if they invited him, he came. Now, he was a huge draw. People came from miles around to hear him. Big event. It kind of reminded me maybe something to the effect of when Cornel West came here to SUNY. People came to hear him preach. He was preaching. But unlike when Cornel West came here, when Chapin came here, there wasn't enough room. We drew more people than we had space for. And I've heard two different versions of this story, and I've heard the same story from a different church about a different person. So they're kind of mixed up in my head. So according to one version of the story, there were so many people packed in that Chapin could not get into the sanctuary and had to come in through a window. The other version of the story is there were so many people packed in at the end of the service, in order to make his train, he had to exit through the window. Both of the churches I heard this about, Geneva, Illinois, and this one, were on the train line and had famous ministers come and preach. So either this is a common story or a common occurrence. We now have a door back here behind the chancel closet, so I don't ever have to worry about going in and out a window in case I get that popular. There you go. In any case, the reporter at the time mentioned, as part of the service, the humorous aspect of Chapin either entering or exiting through the window, because the window wasn't that big and he wasn't that small. Fortunately, his pride did not suffer too badly, and he apparently made it inside to do the preaching, or made it outside and made his train, either way. So, Oneonta was only one of dozens of sanctuaries that Edward Chapin helped raise funds for, and he preached the dedication sermon at. This was a standard thing for him to do. We are somewhat special in that this was the last one he dedicated. He died the next year after dedicating this sanctuary. And so the Universalists here in Oneonta named their sanctuary after him after he died. His photo still hangs over the doorway as you walk in, and he still watches over us. And like I said, we now have a back door to the chancel closet, so we don't have to worry about that. Now, speaking of the windows, our pride and joy in the sanctuary are the beautiful windows. Everybody have a favorite one? My favorite one is that one. Because that one, when the sun hits it just right, it puts rainbows on the floor. The one in the back, in the loft, is the biggest one, and that's the one I get to see most often when the doors are open and you're all looking at me. Look around at them for a little bit. Over the years, Rich Stelling has been organizing the ongoing repair and refurbishing of those windows. Every year during the year-end appeal, we raise funds to complete another window. Rich, how much do we need per window usually? Is it like about $2,000 to $3,000 per window? And we've been doing this for a while now. How many we got left? Five left to go. The outside of the windows are covered in plexiglass, protecting them from harm. I am told, glass, protecting them. I'm told that that is because at one point in time we had vandals breaking our windows. Apparently lightning was not bad enough. We didn't have people throwing stones. As you look at the windows, you can't help but notice the two chancel windows. Two of these things are not like the others. Two of these windows just don't belong. Now, we do a fairly good job of decorating them, but they are not like the other windows. The two chancel windows were not victims of vandals. They were a casualty of a time of strife and transition here at the Unitarian Universalist Society. In the 60s and the early 70s, a strong wave of humanism was sweeping through Unitarian Universalism, and Oneonta was no exception. The Christian Universalists were getting older in the congregation, and they watched as younger families with humanist beliefs and theologies joined the congregation. A new minister was called, the Reverend Hunter Leggett, and he also had a more humanist take on our tradition. He, as new ministers are wont to do, made some changes to the worship services. It's kind of in our playbook. We have to. He removed the Lord's Prayer from the worship service and the 23rd Psalm from regular use. I am guessing this is also when we turned the chancel table around. I have made sure that it is turned facing towards you and not covered up today, just to let you see. It is engraved on that side in honor of communion. It's a communion table. We don't use that anymore. And we turn it around and cover it up. As these changes were taking place, some of the longer-term members of the congregation left, seeking other faith communities to join. Many ended up at First United Methodist, I suspect, our closest cousins in town, liberally minded, but most definitely Christian. It was around this time of transformation and transition and strife that those windows disappeared. The chancel windows weren't like the windows you see. They were two great stained glass angels bracketing the chancel, flanking and leading us on in worship. In talking to Bob, there was the possibility that those two windows came to us from an older church, yes? The original church. Those were the original windows. Slightly different than the rest. Now, we don't know for sure exactly because there's no photos that exist of them. Can't find any photos. The best we've been able to determine is a member of the congregation could not abide the Christian symbolism of the angels, and so with the blessing of the leadership at the time, they removed the windows and set them out back. And what happened to them from there, no one knows. Perhaps someone took them. Perhaps they went with the trash. Either way, no one ever saw them again. I am glad they didn't get rid of the other Christian symbols that are sprinkled throughout the other windows. The key row above the chancel, which is the symbol for Christ, still remains. There's a cross over there. The lily over there refers to resurrection. We've got the sun, that's not really as Christian, so that probably could stay. And we have a crown as the centerpiece of the main window over the loft for the King of God. But the angels are gone. It is an unpleasant part of our history, but worth telling, as a reminder of what it means to be tolerant of all faiths, especially the faith tradition we came out of. It takes a very special form of anger or intolerance or hurt to say, we cannot have angels in this church, and remove them. You never know what part of our history will be important to our future. Now, speaking of the future, I would like to share two more recent stories with you, much more positive ones. And I think they get at the heart of who we are and where our future lies. As I was talking to Alice, she mentioned that the biggest draw to this church, her biggest fondness for this church all the time, are the families and the children. And I agree with her. So I have two stories to share very quickly. One, a couple of Christmases ago, Christmas fell on a Sunday. So we had two Christmas Eve services, and then we had a Christmas morning service. And I wasn't fairly sure that most people would come to both. But I was darned if we weren't going to have services on Sunday. So I said to my wife, I said, I'd like to do something special that Sunday. I'd like to do services in our pajamas and serve breakfast to everybody who shows up. And for some reason, she said yes. And so we did. The night before, at one of our Christmas Eve services, Mary Ellen gave a wonderful solo piece and sang. And during the time where she was singing, Jamie was having none of it. Jamie was screaming bloody murder because her mother was not with her and her grandmother could not soothe her. And somebody attacked Mary Ellen later that night for being a bad mother while she was singing for our Christmas Eve service. So much so that Mary Ellen left in tears that night. And I thought for sure that we would not see Mary Ellen or Jay or Jamie again. The next morning, Cheryl and I were sitting in the front, dressed in our pajamas. She had on her cat pajamas, so they were the cat's pajamas, and Freudian slippers, and I had on a classic blue and white New England style with the cap, and I was wearing my bumble feet. And in walked the whole family, Jamie and Mary Ellen and Jay and Grandma and Grandpa, and they were in their pajamas. And we came in and we did worship in the round. We had the circle set up, and we told stories and we sang songs. And as soon as we started singing, Jamie ran into the middle of the circle and danced and spun with wild abandon, with utmost glee on her face. And as soon as we stopped singing, she sat down. And then when we sang, she got up and did it again. It wasn't planned, it wasn't asked for, but it was by far the best part of the service. And then after the service, her grandmother came up to me and said, "It does my heart glad to see that my granddaughter is in a place that loves her." That was a good Christmas. The second story is more recent. It's this year. Earlier this year, we had a Bring Your Friend to Church Day. And afterwards, we had a conversation up in the loft. And I had a visitor come up and start asking questions. She wanted to know about religious education here at the church. And so I tried to explain as best I could what we teach our children about the different faiths and the different people and the different beliefs. And she said, "Don't you think that your children are a little confused?" At which point there was a knock on the door to the loft, and in poked the head of Adam. And Adam poked his head in and said, Reverend Craig. I kind of looked at the adults and said, "Give me just a second." I said, "Adam, do you need something?" "Yes." And he came in. And apparently in RE that day there had been a kerfluffle. And the kerfluffle had ended with Adam being called a name he didn't like. And so he explained this to me. I said, "Okay. Did the teachers take care of it?" "Yes." "Okay. Did the person apologize for the name?" "Yes." "Okay. Do you forgive them?" He cocked his head and I said, "You don't have to. It's one of the hardest things to do is to forgive somebody." "I forgive him." "Okay. Well, then you need to go and tell him that. And then you need to live as if you do." "Okay." I said, "All right, are we okay?" "Yes." I said, "Okay, off you go." "Thank you, Reverend Craig," and he runs off. He closes the door behind him. And I turned to our guest and I said, "No." I do not think our children are confused one bit. This congregation was founded on the theology of salvation, the belief that love was eternal and infinite. It was founded with hope and optimism and the belief that we are all responsible for one another. It is a great collection of stories with no end in sight. may it be.
Thank you for listening to this service recording of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Oneonta, New York. We are a welcoming congregation, accepting and affirming the lives of gay, lesbian, and bisexual people here among us. All members of the human family are welcome here. Our worship services take place every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. in our sanctuary, located at 12 Ford Avenue in Oneonta, New York. For more information about Unitarian Universalism and our congregation, please visit us in person or explore our website at www.uuso.org. This service is shared under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License.